Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, March 27, 2019. The head of the UN mission in South Sudan says warring parties are still recruiting soldiers.
As you said, Barra Ghazal is one of them, and the Warap and Lakes, that's definitely from what we can understand from Sidi Sam, but it's also we're hearing anecdotal reports of various recruitments going on in other parts of the country as well.
And a South Sudanese activist says his government must employ young people to develop the country.
What I believe in every financial, they should be able to tell us how many jobs are they going to create. For example, in the oil sector, how many jobs are they going to create? Even in the government, we have people who are above 75 years and they are still working.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The chairman of the South Sudan Workers Union at the National Legislative Assembly was gunned down Tuesday after attending a peace mission in Nasir. Simon Deng Bol was killed in Madeng village, an area under the control of SPLM-IO rebels. The deputy military spokesman of the SPLA-IO released a statement on WhatsApp group in which he distanced the rebels from the incident. The statement accuses what the rebels called criminals as being behind the lawmaker's death. South Sudan in Focus spoke to a politician in Juba who confirmed the incident but declined to comment on record. This program made several calls to the Speaker of the National Legislative Assembly, Anthony Lino Makana, for comment. He did not answer our calls. The program also made several calls to the Minister of Information in Lajor State for comments on the incident, but our calls went unanswered. It is not clear why Ball was gunned down. The lawmaker is the first senior official to be killed while on a mission to explain the terms of the revitalized peace agreement. The Revitalized Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, a body tasked with monitoring the peace agreement, has not reacted to the incident. The Ceasefire and Transitional Security Arrangement Monitoring and Verification Mechanism, another body tasked with monitoring the ceasefire, has not issued any statement on the killing of Simon Deng Bol. A top United Nations official in South Sudan says the country's warring parties are recruiting new fighters across the country, a clear violation of last year's revitalized peace deal. The special representative of the UN Secretary General in South Sudan says the UN mission will use its new mandate to ensure that the peace process moves forward. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
Army's Chief David Sierra told reporters at a Juba news conference today that while overall fighting has diminished in many parts of the country, recruitment among the warring parties continues in different parts of the country, according to the Ceasefire Transitional Security Arrangement and Verification Mechanism, or CITISAM.
As you said, Barra Ghazal is one of them, and the Warap and Lakes, that's definitely from what we can understand from Sidi Sam, but it's also we're hearing anecdotal reports of various recruitments going on in other parts of the country as well.
Shera says the parties should be busy reducing their forces, not the other way around. In its latest report, CITISAM, body tasked with monitoring the security arrangements, said government's army is forcefully recruiting civilians in Twitch, President Salva Kiir's hometown area. CITISAM also accused the SPLA-IO of recruiting fighters in the Kangi area of Mapel. South Sudan Army spokesman Major General Lul Rai Kwong denies knowing anything about recruitment of soldiers.
I'm not aware of any informal recruitment that has been going on.
Kwong says announcements are usually broadcast on air all over the country whenever the SSPDF needs new recruits for the army, something he says has not been done lately. SPLA-IO Deputy Military Spokesman Colonel Lam Paul Gabriel also denies his group is recruiting new fighters.
I am currently in Wau, and Mapel is just a few minutes away from my location. We were yesterday together with the governor of Wau, the Tigunu governor, or the incumbent Tigunu governor of Wau, and also the division commander of Division 5 in Wau. We never heard of any report of SPLA-IO recruiting to Mapel.
And Ms. Chief Sierra says the peace process is facing many challenges, including funding. He says the parties to last year's peace deal lack a clear work plan. Without it, he says, they will not win financial support from the international community and other people of goodwill.
We need a clear roadmap, a detailed and realistic work plan for the international community to invest in the process. The government must also step up and take the lead by making a contribution itself to the process too. It is important that the various committees do not become bogged down in the minutiae and the procedural discussions at the cost of making real tangible progress on the ground.
Shira says the process is now way behind its schedule. He is urging the regional bloc, IGAD, and the opposition parties to quickly implement security arrangements ahead of the deadline for forming the transitional government of national unity in May.
The agreement needs to be supported. A peace that falters will generate frustration, which will generate anger and a possible return to violence that could equal 2013 and 2016. We cannot allow that to happen. Like others, we have our concerns about the peace process. Progress lags behind what is expected and what was planned. There is no perfect process. I don't think there ever has been a perfect process. And for our part, UNMISS is committed to continuing to focus attention on and resources on making it work.
Shira says it is a good thing that the UN Security Council decided to extend the UNMISS mandate for another year until March 15, 2020, so UNMISS can focus on helping to implement the revitalized peace deal.
The Security Council added a provision for UNMISS to provide technical assistance and or advice to the peace process. This is very important because it allows us to be more flexible and proactive in our support. For example, to provide experts to assist the various committees of the peace process if they need our help.
And that includes issues of our security arrangements, border issues, and constitutional amendments, says Sierra. On the bright side, he says, the reduction in the level of violence across the country has given hope to many displaced people to return to their homes. The number of South Sudanese seeking refuge at UN-run protection of civilian sites has fallen from 205,000 before the signing of the peace deal to about 193,000, according to the UN. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Unemployment among young South Sudanese is very high. A young South Sudanese on an international visitor leadership program in the United States blames the government of South Sudan for a lack of programs focusing on youth empowerment. Wani Michael says young South Sudanese are eager to build their country, but older civil servants are refusing to retire. Michael says he is in the United States to learn new skills on how to create employment for young people in South Sudan.
Yes, I think also we really need to look at also different angles. First of all, the youth of South Sudan did not get the opportunity to exploit their own talents.
But why should you be given an opportunity? Why can't you look for that opportunity?
Yes, the opportunity I mean is that we had been engaging in conflict since even we got independent. So the youth have never been in an environment where they can be able to exploit their own talent itself. They had been manipulated by the politicians and the leaders to fight, you know, for themselves. So the narrative that people are blaming youth for not doing work, to me,
for sitting under the tree and drinking tea throughout the day. This is what I hear, that people sit under the tree drinking tea throughout the day.
I don't dispute that. I don't dispute that. But then somebody need to interrogate. Why do somebody wake up in the morning, go sit and take tea the whole day? There must be a problem somewhere that need to be fixed.
And what is the problem?
The problem is that the leaders need to bring the country to stability. The problem is that the political leaders need to reconcile among themselves so that we're able to move forward. Because as long as you continue to fight each other, you know, the young people are going to continue, you know, taking tea. Because I still believe that some of them who are taking tea are people who are frustrated by the things that are happening in the country. So I still believe that those young people can be made productive. Because even John Tanza, since we got independent, there is no government programs geared towards youth. even the social and youth development policy, which is supposed to be a roadmap for the government to implement programs on youth, is not there.
But there is a ministry dedicated for youth and culture.
The Ministry of Culture, Youth and Sports has been one of the under-budgeted ministries in all the departments of the government. In the last financial year of 2018-2019, they only given 52 or 53 million pounds. It has been one of the under-budgeted ministry. So how do you expect a ministry that deals with 72% to only be given 52-53 million pounds to deal with this bigger population? And most of these sums of money goes to salaries, payment of salaries. So government need to come up with programs. How do they deal with unemployment? John Tanza, you have seen budgets that have been drafted in South Sudan. I have never seen the government telling us how are they going to tackle unemployment issue in the country. Because what I believe in every financial year, they should be able to tell us how many jobs are they going to create. For example, in the oil sector, how many jobs are they going to create? Even in the government, we have people who are above 75 years and they are still working. And the law says anybody above 75 is supposed to retire.
Talk to us a little bit about your initiative in South Sudan. I understand that you have been doing a monthly cleanup of the city. But, you know, once you clean, 1 hour later, people litter around again.
We have this monthly cleaning exercise called Nadafa Lebelena, literally meaning let us clean our country. It was a program that was initiated by a number of organizations, including OK Africa Foundation. We have CAPAT, we have ARUDA, we also have the Association of the Farmers. So it is a program that we congregate most of the time. The youth organization, we congregate every month to clean the city. We are trying to create awareness on our people that you still can make this country great. You can still make South Sudan great. If you can clean the street, if you can clean the street of Juba, you still have the capacity to clean the violence in the country. You still have the capacity to clean corruption away from this country. You still have the capacity to clean all these evil things and deeds in the country. So we are telling citizens that since you can still clean the street, you still have the capacity to make your country great, to make the country that you want. The country is not about the politicians. The country is about all of us. It should be able to accommodate all of us. Citizens have a responsibility to play to bring South Sudan into peace, prosperity, and stability.
That's Owani Michael, the executive director of the Juba-based nonprofit known as OK Africa. He was speaking with me here in Washington earlier today. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, IGAD countries say refugees need help in efforts to earn a living. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how much influence do your parents have on your decisions?
My parents had an influence on me before they passed away, especially my late dad. He inspired me to be the first in everything. At that time, I was in primary school.
In a case when I need to take any decision, I first consult my parents in order to give me a way out on how I should make a good decision. So they always contribute a lot in everything that I'm doing in my life.
I think they have a large influence on the decisions that I make because, well, I have to ask for permission for stuff to do, like if I want to go out, you know, stuff like that.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus. Across the diaspora, many young Sudanese have joined demonstrations denouncing the only Sudanese president they have ever known while demanding a change for a country they have never stepped foot in. 20-year-old Sudanese-American demonstrator Sarah Ahmed, who has never visited or lived in Sudan, tells Ayen Deng Bior why she feels she has just as much at stake regarding the future of her country.
I want the world to know that there's actually this is not a well-known, not everyone is really talking about this situation that's going on in Sudan right now. Thousands, I'll give you guys a brief background on it. Basically, our president that has been running for nearly 35 years since 1989 has been reelected when he won unpopular votes. And people are against the idea. And when people are out there speaking their own mind, they're getting killed for it. They're speaking against how there's increased prices of foods, how many the lack of freedom of speech or media. And there's also many people getting killed because of the protests. And
everything that you just mentioned right now, how does that impact you? Because you're not in Sudan, you're here in the U.S.
It impacts me very bad. Like, I really, words can't describe how I'm feeling towards the situation and my emotions that are showing right now. I mean, that are, like, in me, like, I'm raging, I'm upset about the situation right now. I don't know if my family is even safe. Sudan was once a home for all of us, and now we're forced out of our homes to escape what's really going on, the true reality that's going on in Sudan, in the Sudanese society right now. Well, we leave behind our families and relatives that are facing such tragic events, and how they are losing their kids and all this chaos and everything.
What else do you want our listeners to know?
I also just wanted you guys to know about what was really going on, like I said, because it's not really a really discussed on topic. Millions are dying. I mean, thousands are dying to fight for what's right, fight for their human rights, to fight for better environment, better medical treatments, and better living conditions. But it really isn't discussed on topic. People are more focused on what's really going on in America, which, yes, we should focus on as well. But we should also focus on what's going on internationally, what's going on around us, and understand people's background or cultures. So, yeah, and what's really going on behind their culture. So, yeah.
That was Sudanese-American Sarah Ahmed speaking to Ayen Dengbior here in Washington. The United Nations is assessing the cyclone Idai humanitarian crisis in Zimbabwe as calls for the government to provide aid more quickly grow louder. Columbus Mavunga reports from the hard-hit district of Chimanimani, about 500 kilometers southeast of Harare.
At Machongwe village in Zimbabwe's Chimanimani district, the area was hit by cyclone Idai. People wait as officials prepare food. Cornmeal has run out, but authorities say other food is being distributed. Coming here has become a daily routine for many since the disaster hit on March 16, including Susan Makuza. She takes care of 5 children whose parents died in the cyclone. Poverty has struck us, says Makuza. Our maize crops were swept away with the river. Our survival is at risk and we do not know what to do, she says. We came to receive food, but we were not given any and our houses went down the river. We are sleeping outside, says Makuza, adding that I was kindly asking for help. That is the same for 81-year-old Wamizai Matamande. There's really hunger here, says Matamande, because Cyclone Idai damaged our granaries. So we are frequenting this place hoping to get something like cornmeal. But I have not received anything, says Matamande. Lloyd Kasima is the acting district administrator for Chimanimani. He told United Nations officials assessing the situation that the government was aware of the villagers' struggle. He said after Cyclone Idai hit, more than 7,000 people were left homeless, while more than 40,000 people have no food.
But at the moment, the distribution is quite slow because of transport problems. But at the moment, there are some people, the Chinese contractors, who are at least trying to open our usual road. We have seen that they are making progress.
Bo Victor Neland is the Deputy Regional Director for the United Nations International Children's Emergency Fund. He says UNICEF is setting up a temporary rehabilitation center at Ngangu School for children traumatized by Cyclone Idai. UNICEF is seeking aid to help Malawi, Mozambique, and Zimbabwe address children's health, sanitation, and education concerns in the wake of the cyclone.
Globally, for the three countries, it's going to be about 150 million that we're appealing. That's about the calculation at the moment. But we're also still discovering, because some of the areas are inaccessible.
Acting UN representative in Zimbabwe, Esther Muiya, says Harare is doing its best to cope given the scale of the needs.
There's still a lot of gaps. Most people lost all their food. And you know, there was an impending drought already in Manicaland. And the cyclone has actually compounded the whole situation. The waterways have been destroyed completely. People do not have clean, safe water for drinking. And that's a big priority at the moment.
The European Union has funded a World Food Programme-owned helicopter to bring in UNICEF equipment and chemicals to prevent waterborne diseases. Villagers here hope donors will soon provide funds for airlifting much-needed food to the thousands of people left struggling to survive. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Chimanimani, Zimbabwe.
From Zimbabwe, we move to Uganda, where officials from the IGAD member countries are meeting in the capital, Kampala, to talk about ways to improve the livelihoods of the refugees and residents of host communities. A representative of South Sudanese refugees in Uganda who attended the meeting says giving grants to refugees to start businesses is one way IGAD can help. Mungume Debs Rakarinj has more for VOA from Kampala.
Susan Grace Duku says South Sudanese refugees, many of whom are women, would benefit greatly if they receive grants to start small businesses.
If I start a business, the money that I get from the business will help me to buy uniforms for the children, even to educate other children at home, and it can even help me to sustain myself with the family issues.
Grace Duku says the money would also enable her to buy food to supplement the small portions of food she receives from aid workers. Besides taking care of her own four children and three other relatives, Grace Duku supervises four other unaccompanied minors at her home in the Reno camp of Arua district in northern Uganda. IGAD officials say refugees should be granted resources to improve their ability to earn a living so they can contribute to the socioeconomic development of their host communities and eventually lead to better lives when they return home. Gerard Simon Menya, a commissioner in charge of refugees in the office of Uganda's Prime Minister, says the government and donors must improve social amenities provided to refugees if they want refugees to become self-reliant.
We need to increase, to expand, to construct, to furnish on existing services like education. There are schools in these refugee hosting districts where a school that was originally designed to accommodate 50 pupils has 200 pupils, and ordinarily teaching ceases and there is crowd management. And there are also other facilities like health, safe water provision, and so on.
Uganda hosts more than a million refugees, most of whom are South Sudanese, who fled the fighting that broke out in late 2013. Most of these refugees live in settlement camps in northern Uganda's districts of Adjumani, Koboko, Arua, Moyo, Lamo, and Yumbe. Lucy Daxbaka, an immigration expert at IGAD, says IGAD countries must enact laws that grant refugees access to local jobs and affected movement in host communities.
We must see that we have viable and functional institutions of government that can address all the livelihood needs of refugees, that can address all the protection needs of refugees. I must say, so far, IGAD member states are actually doing a very good job with regard to the protection aspect of refugees. But where we see as IGAD, we need to kind of put more effort now is to promote viable options for living beyond humanitarian assistance, beyond relief.
Menya says refugees' activities have been inadequately funded, adding it is usually about 40% of what is needed to fully fund such a projects.
We need to source for resources to support this initiative because member states of IGAD are least developed countries, and yet the issue of refugees is an international issue. We are simply hosting. So this is an international obligation which must be equally shared by the international community.
Delegates at the meeting say improving the livelihoods of refugees and those of their hosts is essential for global stability and security. For VOA News, Aya Mugume, Davis Rwakarinji ni Kampala, Uganda.
We turn to Algeria, where Army Chief of Staff Ahmed Gaid Salah, widely considered the country's main power broker, told cadets during a nationally televised speech that ailing President Abdelaziz Bouteflika should be declared incapacitated in order to find a peaceful solution to the current political crisis. The head of the parliament would take over as an acting head of state for 45 days. Edward Iranian has more for VOA from Cairo.
In a dramatic move, Algeria's army chief called on parliament during a nationally televised speech to declare ailing President Abdelaziz Bouteflika incapacitated, triggering Article 102 of the Constitution and handing temporary power to Parliament Speaker Abdelkader Ben Salah after a two-thirds vote of parliament. He says this is in order to find a constitutional outlet to the current crisis, which is the only way to maintain stability in the country and respond to the legitimate demands of the people while being an acceptable solution to all concerned. He calls on Parliament to trigger Article 102 of the Constitution, deeming the president to be incapacitated. Under Article 102, two-thirds of Parliament must vote to declare ailing incumbent President Abdelaziz Bouteflika, whose term officially ends on April 21st, unable to govern, giving temporary power to the Parliament Speaker as acting president for 45 days. The Constitutional Council would then rule on the president's inability to govern, granting a further 45 days as acting head of state to the parliament speaker. He would then organize fresh presidential elections. President Bouteflika, who recently returned from a trip for medical treatment in Geneva, indicated 10 days ago that he was calling off presidential elections, originally due to take place next month, but he would not run for a fifth term. Tens of thousands of people have taken to the streets of the capital, Algiers, and many other Algerian towns and cities to call on President Bouteflika to step down and to demand major political changes each Friday for the past month. Naaman Laour, a leader of the Movement for a Peaceful Society, told Algerian TV the president must bow to the demands of the people.
That story by Edward Uranian brings us to the end of our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with Nyankol singing about her heritage. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We appreciate you inviting us into your homes and vehicles. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.